brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, heterosexual,
homophobic, even.
Oh no, Doug! It's an age-free zone. It cost me a buck.
I must have missed that. It cost me a buck.
Cost me.
Do you take credit cards?
Are you going to pay?
I'll pay. It was my slip up.
All right, you pay Nathaniel a dollar.
Heterosexual and then anti-choice.
Anti-choice.
Definitely
talk
anti-choice.
Show host.
It's always an anti-choice month.
They want the money now.
The number to call to participate in the program is, do you take credit cards? Is 1-800-836-9278.
It's only a dollar. Doug gave Jason Troyer his entire wallet.
There's nothing in
just
the wallet.
Just take a dollar out, and that'll
There's
be...
no dollar in the Wait, wallet.
Well, just take a dollar.
You remember when I was All feigning right. as if I wanted to pick up the check at dinner earlier?
Tonight.
That was a complete facade.
All right. So that's $7 I've had to pay so far this month.
Really?
For violating the H-free zone. For those who are new to the show, this month of February, we cannot use the H word on the show.
And that's not Hillary.
No.
Although we'll have
can't
a Hillary.
Can't use the H word. Can't even use the G word.
No.
No G word.
Okay.
Or the Q word.
Not the Q word?
Or the L word.
Oh, man.
None of those words, nor will we take calls from...
Any of those ilk. Any of that ilk.
Yeah.
But we will take calls, right?
Yeah,
from normal people.
Right.
800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278 if you want to participate in the program.
I don't know if we'll take calls from liberals.
That's the L word.
No, that's a different L word.
Okay.
That's a totally different L word.
Anyway.
What if the caller doesn't know if he's a liberal?
Well.
How could they know if they're a liberal?
How can you know if you're a liberal?
How about if all life is sacred to you?
Right.
Except for unborn children.
Oh.
Then you're a liberal.
That's very good.
Is that good?
You might be a liberal if.
If you think Sean Penn or Rosie O'Donnell are intellectuals. Right? If trees are more important than people, then you might be a liberal.
You might be a liberal.
Okay.
And we probably have some other examples. But yeah. If I want to start out, Bob, you have the patience of a saint. What you did for Larry.
Oh, Larry.
If you folks haven't listened the last couple days, Larry did one of the most complete jobs of utterly embarrassing oneself that I've ever heard in the history of broadcasting.
That's right. That show title on KGov.com.
Yeah. Can Larry Burn Forever? Probably one of the most clever show titles in the history of Bob Enyart Live. That was classic.
Can Larry Burn Forever? That was funny.
But, Bob, the fact that you spent that much time with a guy.
Ruined the ratings.
Well, but he so obviously needs help, and you're there to help him. And if there's anyone who's ever going to help that poor guy, it's you. And he's not a poor guy. He's actually a willfully ignorant guy who hates God, I think. That's the vibe
God.
I got.
That's because he obviously has an IQ. He can think.
Yeah.
But he has such a passion to hate God that he is intentionally hypocritical, contradictory, in the dark, groping in the dark. With no chance to see light or hope because he wants to be ignorant because Jesus Christ said, I am the truth. And if you refuse to know Jesus Christ, you descend into deeper and deeper darkness. And what a good example of that Larry is.
Oh, a tremendous example. And then you are gracious enough to give him an opportunity to come on the air the next day, which is not something that you do with everyone that stupid. You just wouldn't do that normally, Bob. So you have really gone the extra mile with the guy. And, you know, I prayed for him last night.
Good. I'm glad you did.
You know?
I know that a lot of people prayed for Larry, and we will pray for Larry.
Yeah, and I appreciate you getting his attention.
Mm-hmm. You know, the call screener told me, so I asked Larry straight out, do you believe in God? And what did he say? What did Larry say when I asked him that?
He said no.
And so, you know the racist from Indianapolis who's been calling this show now and then, Ed from Indianapolis?
Yeah.
He called in, got through the call screener, which is not all that hard to do. 800-836-9278, 1-800-8-NYART. He got through, and he said, Bob's a jerk. Larry didn't say he's an atheist. He didn't say he doesn't believe in God. And the call screener just went, click. You know, being a racist or an atheist, these things really do make it hard to think clearly.
Yeah, they really do.
Your mind is so filled with hatred, with bitterness, with the determination to be wrong, that you often can't think straight.
And you embarrass yourself in front of the whole country on the radio. But maybe down the road, maybe Larry will be able to look back to this moment of shame and embarrassment that he's had in his life someday, and he'll be able to laugh at it and say, you know what, that was when I started to figure it out.
Yeah.
Let's hope so, anyways.
All right. Well, hey, Doug, since you brought up something from last night's show, I never finished a news story.
You got a news story.
Well, it's a report on people who have been against the war.
Oh, yes, the anti-war protesters, the anarchists and the neo-hippies and all the nose ring-wearing
complaining
kids.
That Bush has not given an estimate of the cost of the war, and this will be our first preemptive war.
Oh, yeah.
And so the story, basically, Ted Kennedy, the ambassador from Iraq, was asking if Bush had estimated the cost of the war.
Okay.
And what are you laughing about?
You say that was Ted Kennedy. Has he been promoted out of the Senate?
Oh, yeah. You know, I never noticed that. It was just here in the lead of the story.
That was in the
Ted
AP?
Ted Kennedy, the ambassador from Iraq. I thought, I didn't know. It's from The Onion, you know?
Oh, it's from The Onion. Okay.
It's not from The Onion. It's our own notes here.
Oh,
but
okay.
That's not his title.
That's your way of helping the AP report the story in the correct light.
Oh, okay. Ted Kennedy, ambassador from Iraq, wanted to know if George Bush has estimated the cost of the war. Well, did Roosevelt on December 8th?
Yeah, I don't remember him laying out a strict, structured budget for the war. It was pretty much victory at any cost, I think. Maybe it was Churchill who said that.
Did the Republicans say, wait a minute, you haven't given an estimate of the cost of the war? Did they do that?
I don't think so.
No, they didn't do that. George Washington estimate the cost of the War of Independence?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I don't think he had but only because he didn't have a structure in place in which to submit a budget.
He didn't have a spreadsheet.
They didn't have a slide rule back then.
And so, you know, that's...
Well, but if you stop to think just a moment just about the financial, what are the possible financial costs of the war?
Yeah.
If you look at the threat posed by Saddam Hussein as opposed to the threat that was posed by the Nazi regime.
Right.
It's significantly net less, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And so the cost of the war will be, well, we could pretty much do it on the cheap, I would guess, if you wanted to sit down and crunch the numbers.
Well, let's just ballpark it and say $85 billion.
Yeah, it's costing something just like $200 million a day, I heard, with the forces that are right now amassed over there.
Yeah, but what do we spend a day anyway?
Those guys would be laying around the barracks ironing their socks, you know. So
it costs a lot. You know, it costs more extending the force halfway around the world.
Yeah.
It costs more, but it costs a lot anyway.
Yeah, and it's negligible when you try to think about what's the cost of an American city struck by a smallpox.
Yeah, or ricin or anthrax or whatever.
Yeah, any of the other goodies that Saddam Hussein has not accounted for. Everyone's looking for the smoking gun. The smoking gun is the stuff we haven't found, you know?
Yeah, and so what's the cost of not going to war? And then I want to talk about Hollywood's hissy fit.
Oh, boy.
Against a preemptive war.
All right. 800-8-NYART. We'll be right back.
Listener-supported radio right here on Bob and Yurt Live.
By the way, I heard your commercial last night, Bob. They were awesome.
Really? The commercials?
They were awesome. They inspired me.
Wow.
We need, and you know what it is, Bob, is we need the help of the listeners, especially here in the Denver area, all over the country, but specifically here in Denver, to stay on the air.
That's absolutely right. Our airtime bill, now we're a small ministry. We're not a big ministry.
Not huge, but.
No. We're 8 cities, $5,000 a month airtime.
But that's a lot of money when you,
it's a lot of money for us.
Yeah.
And in Denver alone, Denver's the biggie, about $2,000 a month. And we need help from our audience. We've got 13 people who've pledged $100 a month.
And we need a few more to sign up at $100 a month.
You know what's interesting? We got to 13 people and then we got stuck.
Yeah, we're stuck at 13.
It's
15? It's 15? We've just.
Last night from Canada, $200 for Denver.
There is hope for Canada. Look at this.
Now that, see, I thought that was free.
How many radio ministries inspire a guy from Canada to support your broadcast in Denver?
In Denver.
That's tremendous.
So our phone number to call in or to make a pledge or to order the plot, manuscript,
Or any of the videos that you started naming video off tapes. These videos last night. It was amazing the amount of stuff you've got available.
Mount Moriah, the death penalty video, a Bible tour of Israel.
You debating with an ACLU guy? That's got to be awesome.
That was fun. Debating an evolutionist.
An evolutionist? An atheist?
Debating a... Oh, can't say it. Live from Las Vegas, get out of the matrix, divorce and remarriage.
Yeah.
So our phone number, 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. And then
they went on with the commercial.
And then there was more.
You know, it's not just videos. There's a tremendous amount of Bible study material. Mm. How long have you been doing the Bible study now?
I forget.
It's going on 5 years.
5 years?
Yeah, I think it is 5 years.
Wow.
And in that 5 years, you've amassed such a just a cornucopia of information on
all these Bible study albums.
Yeah.
And, you know, Revelation Volume 1 and 2, they're available now. Is today Friday?
Today's Friday, the 7th of February.
I'm going to have a heart attack.
Why?
I didn't pick up our MP3s.
Whoops.
From Mountain States Audio.
Well.
To bring to the NRB. Tomorrow morning, I'm flying out.
Hmm.
Are they open Saturday mornings?
You know, I think certain members of their staff may be listening.
Right around 6:30 in the morning. If anyone from Mountain States Audio is tuning in right now, please call Bob and Yart Live, the office number. We need to pick up something before a convention. Hey, Doug, radio, is that's called broadcasting?
Broadcasting, yes.
Is it legal to narrowcast while you're broadcasting?
Well, I think that's...
Since no one listens to this show, could we send out a message to one person?
Yeah, I think you could do that.
The store, the retail clerk at Mountain States Audio.
Those are great guys over there at Mountain States Audio.
Aren't they fabulous?
Awesome.
They're reproducing the CD-ROM that we're using at the convention in Nashville for next week, at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention.
Well, you're going to be doing the show live from the convention floor?
Yeah, Monday and Tuesday, and then live from Memphis, the IRN network headquarters, on Wednesday.
Wow.
At 4 o'clock Central Time. That'll be fun. In fact, people could call in there if they want to be on the show, 4 o'clock Central on Wednesday. But we need a phone call. I just found out from our business manager, we need a phone call from the retail clerk at Mountain States Audio.
Right.
Call the Bob and Yart Live business office.
Got to get in touch with those guys.
It's vital.
Yeah. Now, what were you saying about preemptive war?
Oh, yeah, preemptive war. If Hollywood's taking a hissy fit against that, but wouldn't it have been better for us to launch a preemptive war against Hitler?
Yeah. Well, somebody should have done something about that whole thing.
Well, forget the French. They're not going to do anything.
No, the French. Bob.
You know, we don't call it French toast for nothing. they weren't going to do anything then other than, what, an invitation to march into Paris?
Well, I tell you, Bob, I'm actually reading this book right here.
What?
It's by a guy named Alan Bullock, a professor. It's called Hitler, A Study in Tyranny. Mm. And the fact that this guy was able to hijack one of the most advanced cultures on the planet. It's an amazing story. Mm-hmm. And it's primarily due to the French. They're the same French today, too, by the way, Bob. The same French then as they are now.
They're toast.
And World War II can be laid pretty much at the feet of the French. The French allowed a nut job, who was basically a kookburger who lived in a homeless shelter and was a total loser,
right,
to take over Germany.
And we're not even going to talk about his orientation.
We're not going to go. Oh, and by the way, Bob, you got to read this book. That's all I'm going to say.
It's a good
book.
That's
all I'm going to say.
Well, HBO has a special about Hitler.
Uh-huh.
We're not going to talk about it.
We're not going to go into that because we need to leave those type of issues aside.
Wouldn't it have been better if we had sunk the Japanese armada on December 6th?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that have been better?
That would have been better. A preemptive strike.
Would have been better. Maybe if we sunk the British warships before they arrived at Boston Harbor in the Hudson River.
It would have shortened that war significantly.
Yeah. Well, and if Bill Clinton would have accepted one of the Sudan's offers to turn over Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
Was it two or three occasions they said, hey, we've got this guy, Osama bin Laden. We don't want him. Mr. Clinton, will you take him?
Hey, man, I'm busy. I'll call you back. Oh, but we're not going to go there either. When you said preemptive action, I thought you were referring to this story.
What story?
From North Korea.
We got to go to the phones, but tell us this.
Have you heard about this? Thursday, North Korea, according to the United Press International, warned the United States that any decision to send more troops to the region could lead to the North making a preemptive attack on American forces in the South. So, North, who do these guys think they are, the North Koreans? What's going on? That guy's obviously insane.
They are insane.
But you know what? Just because someone's insane. Just because someone's insane and stupid
doesn't mean they're not dangerous.
Right, exactly.
That's exactly true.
So, I'm all for a preemptive strike. And if you're against a preemptive strike, please call so that we can embarrass you on the air.
Hey, Doug, I was thinking of making a prediction about Saddam, giving a date.
Ooh.
Is that a good idea, bad idea?
Well, you know,
is it
setting,
being done?
Setting
in
dates.
In the media?
Well, there's action in Vegas if you go on some of the websites.
Oh, you know, I knew from when I was a young Christian, don't set a date for the rapture.
Yeah, avoid that.
I knew that. I avoided that. Never fell into that trap.
But are you going to go out on a limb here?
Well, I'm thinking that Saddam will not be in power in Iraq. He will not be calling the shots as of the Ides of March.
March 11th?
15th.
Oops. My public school is showing, Bob.
You know, your ancient Roman calendar is slipping a
okay,
bit.
So by March 15th, do
the
you know?
Ides of the Ides of each month is the 13th for most of the months, but I think four of the months it's on the 15th.
Oh.
And March is the 15th.
Okay, well, that's an interesting prediction because in Las Vegas, they're not even taking action on dates before the 21st of March.
Oh, they're not.
The best odds right now are for the 21st of March or earlier.
Well,
and you're good doing a week better.
Hey, when there's money on the line.
Right, you're going to.
Those guys.
They know how to handicap these type of things.
All right, I'm changing it, 21st. don't bet against the house. You got to be a fool. Now, I'll go with the Ides of March. He won't be in power.
And I have a feeling that since Saddam Hussein is not a brave man, and he's not a man who is willing to die for his convictions. He's not a martyr. I say he cuts and runs, and he ends up in Libya or France. You know, and they set him up with a chalet
he ends up in
Marseille or something, you know.
How about Arafat's wife? She's been in Paris for forever.
That's true.
I think for the duration of the Intifada.
Yeah.
Let's go to Miami, Florida. Richard, speak your mind.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi. Hi, Richard.
I wanted to talk about Babylon in Revelation 18.
Oh, boy. Do we need to give the warning? Wait, are you going to quote scripture?
Yeah.
Well, hold on there.
Can I read a scripture?
Well, warning, Will Robinson, their Bible verse up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at Bob and Yurt Live that you like to censor anyone who would dare quote a Bible verse in public. This warning gives you fair notice. Raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. Okay,
that
that's for the FCC.
That was great. And you people think that's easy. When I was guest hosting for you, Bob, I tried that.
Oh, yeah?
And it was not pretty.
Well, we just make it up as
Well, Richard, let's hear it.
Go ahead.
Okay, for all the nations have drunk the wine of the wrath of her fornication, actually the passion there from the Greek anyways. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich through the abundance of her luxury. Okay, from the Greek it reads the power of her strength or strain.
All right, Richard, I'm glad you have the Greek there, but we all speak English here in the studio.
Well, I'm interpreting it. I'm translating anyway.
That's okay. It was already translated, right?
Yeah, we speak English. Well, I mean, it's fine. I like that. I studied Greek for a few years, but we speak English.
That's okay.
Go ahead,
Richard.
It's a lot more expressive than English anyway.
Well, you know what? One thing I can tell you, Richard, is that Revelation, the portion of scripture that you're reading is very – it sounds great. So just keep going.
Yeah, it is great. But, you know, English has – how many vocabulary words does English have?
200,000.
250,000. Yeah. And Koine Greek in the New Testament probably has 20,000.
Really?
So I'd say English is extraordinarily expressive. But, Richard, go ahead. The English is fine, I think.
Okay. Anyways, the Babylon is luxuriating over the rest of the world. Okay.
Yeah.
That's where you know here. See, in English, a lot of English translation puts it: the abundance of her luxury. She is luxuriating. She is a buyer. You know what I mean? Okay.
Okay. You're obviously coming to a radical conclusion. So why don't you go ahead and make it
radical?
Yeah.
Well. And we don't mind that.
Guessing. From the Bible. What do you mean radical?
What I'm guessing is that you're coming to a radical interpretation.
Oh,
so I'm inviting you to don't
lay
pull
it on
any
us.
Punches
yeah.
and tell us.
Okay. What country? She is presiding over a trade deficit, a huge trade deficit.
What country?
Mm-hmm.
Trade deficit?
Huge.
A big, massive trade deficit.
Is it bigger than a bread box?
I think it would be Chad. Doesn't Chad have the biggest trade deficit? Nobody there buys anything, and everybody gives them stuff.
Richard wants us to say the U.S.
Okay,
go ahead,
Richard. The United States.
Jeremiah 50, and also in Jeremiah 50, verse 23,
all right.
says, Babylon is the hammer of the whole earth. Now, hammer is a Hebrew idiom meaning to pound into submission to
will. That's the English idiom, too.
Yeah,
hammer. Means to pound into submission.
Drop the
hammer.
Very,
in today's lingo, is very close to the police of the world.
Well, the oppressor of the world is sort of what I think the Bible is getting at.
But. So anyway, Richard. Hey, Richard, you didn't mean to say that the Hebrew word hammer means police of the world, did you?
Hammer is an idiom, and it is it means to pound into submission.
Exactly as in English.
Okay.
So if you want to say that, you know, if you got the mob, a criminal gang, and you call one guy the hammer, whether you're speaking in French or Swahili or English, everybody knows what you mean. He's the hammer. So Babylon is the hammer.
Mm-hmm.
And Richard, I know where you're going. America is Babylon, right? That's what you're going to say.
That's it.
Well, that's not such a dramatic conclusion, you know. Babylon is a system and a thought process and a worldview that's been in existence, since Babylon.
Since Babel.
And it's pretty much right
Babylon. Here. Who started the Babylonian Empire?
Babylon, see, this Babylon is a powerful city, nation, state in the end times.
All right, here's one second. Here, quiz time.
Who founded Babylon?
Who started Babylon?
I know it's on the tip of my tongue, and I hate it when that happens, but Nimrod.
Right.
No?
Nimrod.
Nimrod.
Nimrod started Babylon.
Yeah.
And, in fact, the very first Jew born in Israel after it became a nation, May 14th, 1948, his name was Nimrod. And Nimrod is a really evil guy in the Bible, but his mother named him Nimrod because she was looking for a Bible name, and she didn't know that Nimrod is a bad guy. It's amazing she didn't call him Lucifer. And that, what a symbol of the sad state of biblical knowledge in Israel
today.
Yeah,
that is sad.
That the first Jew born there is Nimrod. Anyway, let me ask you a question, Richard. Because if we're going to understand prophecy, we have to understand the past and where we came from. At the Tower of Babel, remember that God, he did an amazing thing at the Tower of Babel. Why don't you tell the audience what God did there?
Gave us different languages.
Right. He confused the languages.
Yeah.
And that was at the when Babylon was effectively cursed, when the languages were confused by God. Well, that was a two-part question.
Do you know what the biggest problem with centralization of power is?
The biggest problem with centralization of power.
That's a different topic. I want to get to the second part of my question.
Okay.
Yeah, here's the second part of my question.
Stick with Babylon.
If God confused the languages at the beginning of at the Tower of Babel, was there any time in the Bible where he did anything that symbolically brought us back to that event?
The confusing of the language.
Yeah.
So was there...
When he confused the languages so that everyone who could understand one another, all of a sudden they could not understand one another. Well, a fast forward a couple few thousand years to Acts chapter 2 at Pentecost.
Oh, yeah.
When symbolically God was beginning to undo the curse of Babel because those who could not understand one another all of a sudden could. He reversed the curse at Babel.
So we're in the commercial break, and that last reference that you just heard, that last reference, the Acts chapter 2.
Acts 2, reversing the curse at Babel.
That is straight out of the plot manuscript.
The plot, and it's...
And that's just a little sliver of it.
A little snippet. And
a
it
little
doesn't,
tiny sliver.
We didn't even really say what that means or why that is.
No. And I don't think we should. No, we should
leave it
out there, because if you want to find out, call the number, order the plot. It's a bargain, $49.95, and do we charge shipping and handling on
yes,
that?
Yes, on the plot.
Good.
It's heavy. It costs a lot to ship it.
$49.95 plus shipping and handling, a bargain at twice the price. Get the plot and find out more about that little sliver that was just...
Hey, Doug, maybe when we get back on the air, because this is a commercial break.
Right.
For the internet only.
Oh, that's right. Well, we need to tell the folks on the radio.
Maybe we should tell them that the plot talks about that.
Right.
And there's a very specific reason in the Bible why God confused the languages at that point.
Right.
And why he reversed the curse.
Yeah.
He reversed the curse, at least temporarily, in Acts chapter 2, and there's a specific reason.
Yeah.
It's not just an unrelated coincidence.
That's right.
And there's similarities in the stories.
Mm-hmm.
So why? Why is it? Why is that there at that point in time? It's a significant time. And so...
Yeah, what was going on there? Call 800-836-9278. Get the manuscript, the plot. Ask for it by name, and you'll get the answer.
Right.
You'll get the answer.
Okay. Now,
has anyone done that before, Bob?
What?
Has any biblical scholar ever connected those two events before?
Oh, I imagine. I can't recall somebody by name.
I can't recall anybody by name or... And you know, before I met you, Bob, I listened to Christian radio pretty much 8 hours a day at work. I had my little headphones. I worked in a factory.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It kind of hit me like a cold glass of water in the face. I was like, how did I not see this? I've read both stories.
Because when you connect the two, it's extraordinary.
Yeah, it's really great.
It's just extraordinary. And it's not just coincidental. It's not. We'll have to say this when we get back.
Yeah. Now we're wasting valuable commercial time in which we could be hawking your many products, of which there are many good ones. One of my favorites is the whole study you did in Genesis. There's 6 audio albums going through the creation story, the fall, the flood, Abraham and Isaac, Jacob, Joseph. The Tower of Babel is in there, right?
It is.
It's in there, right? Shortly after.
Right in the middle.
Right in the middle of that whole album series. So give us a call, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. Call us, order the products, and support the ministry. So, Bob, before you go on, I just want to let all the folks out there in radio land know that allusion that you just made to the curse at the Tower of Babel.
The Tower of Babel, God confused the languages, the curse.
Yeah.
And he undid the curse. He reversed the curse at Pentecost. In Acts chapter 2.
And there's a reason for that.
There's a big reason
for it. It's not just a coincidence.
No, it's not an insignificant coincidence.
But people,
we're not going to talk
about
it.
No, you've got to order the plot. Order the plot manuscript.
I already got a copy.
No, well, this is for the folks in radio land
out
there. $49.95 plus shipping and handling. A modest fee to pay for just that one little bit of biblical knowledge.
Because is it just a coincidence? Let's go to Richard. Yeah,
how did that end up in the Bible?
In Miami. And Jeff, we'll get to you in South Bend in a moment. But, hey, Richard,
why
do you think – what's the significance of God – confusing the languages at Babel and reversing that curse at Pentecost?
I think we're getting a little sidetracked with that, but that's why I asked you, what do you think the number one problem with centralization?
No, I don't want to answer that question.
Yeah, that's much more boring than discussing the curse. I mean, come on.
Richard, here's why I asked that question. Because we can't understand future prophecy very well. We can't really get a solid handle on it unless we understand what's come before.
Well, explain to me how the curse was reversed, because I'm not sure I understand where you're coming from.
Well, at Babel, God took people who all spoke one language.
And they understood each other.
And
he did that so that he can stop their plans of making, a tower to...
Yeah, and it was the curse of Babel. And even to this day, Saddam Hussein's news agency is called Babel.
Yeah.
And Babel in Iraq, it's Babel. And to this day, we use that term for gibberish, babble. Mm-hmm. And so God confused the languages, and the languages did not evolve gradually. All of a sudden, wildly differentiated, complex languages appeared in Earth's history. So that's pretty cool. Okay, but then on Pentecost in Acts chapter 2, God reversed the curse that he imposed at Babel, in that people who spoke these wildly divergent languages, and Acts 2 lists them all, could all of a sudden understand one another as though they were all speaking the same language. So for some reason, unless it's an unrelated coincidence in the Bible, for some reason they could all understand one another. And
Bob, if you go to, I don't know, right in the middle of an African plain and you see this tribe speaking a language, I mean, you're not going to understand the word they're saying, right?
That's not what I'm asking. That's obvious, but that's not what I'm asking.
I mean, we still speak different languages. The thing
Richard,
is,
I'm asking.
Are,
Richard, it's okay to say. Richard. Richard.
Hit the whole button.
Richard, it's okay to say, I don't know. I never thought about it.
No.
When I'm asking why.
I don't know how it relates. I'll tell you that.
Okay,
all right.
Good. Relates, good. Thank you so much.
Richard, I was in exactly your position just a few short years ago.
After Larry, Richard is a breath of fresh air.
Richard, we love
you,
man.
Thank you, Richard. So, Richard, here's what I suggest. I think that there's so many crucial things of understanding the Bible that happen before you get to the end times, that if you don't have a solid handle on how the big picture fits together, you're going to be guessing when you try to figure out who's Babylon. So when you could call up and tell us why at Pentecost God reversed the curse of Babel, then I'll give you the time.
I don't agree that he reversed any curse.
Thank you very much for your call, Richard. Then I'll give you the time to explain who you think Babel is.
Richard, you can get that answer by calling 1-800-8-NYARD. That's 1-800-836-9278 and ordering the plot.
Wait, now does he have to just repeat it like rote, or does he actually have to
understand it? Of course, Richard could get the answer if he just goes back and reads both of those stories in the Bible. And it might help him
figure it out.
He'll at least be able to see that the curse was lifted.
Okay.
But let's go on to the phones.
And at least temporarily. And God was saying something by doing that.
There was a message in that.
What was he saying? 1-800-836-9278.
Jeff, speak your mind.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing great.
I was just wanting to make a comment on these, Hollywood types and whatnot against the war. I just don't understand it. You know, what do they want to have happen? You know, do they want another attack or what? What are they waiting for? I mean, we have to act on this now.
Jeff, do you know who's the latest to come out against the war?
George Clooney.
He's been there.
In fact, that might have been later today, but just from yesterday, Dustin Hoffman.
Really?
Have you heard this one? He says that the Bush administration is manipulating the grief of the country after the events of September 11th, and he goes on to say a bunch of other stuff.
We're just supposed to sit here and do nothing while we're being attacked, and I just don't understand it. It just doesn't register with me. They sit on their high horse and, you know, make all the money and come out, you know, maybe for publicity, you know, to get attention about being counterproductive and against this war.
Well,
you know?
And they really are against the war. And why is it? Why is it that the left is against the war and the right is for it, generally? Why? Well, we have different principles. To the extent the left is based on principles, which is pretty weak.
Yeah.
But superficially, we have different principles. The left, they talk about peace.
Right.
If you're in Israel and there's a bumper sticker, Shalom, what does that mean?
It means he's a liberal.
And that means give the Golan Heights back to Syria so they could continue to shell us.
Exactly.
Right? In the Galilee and kill our kibbutz farmers. Right.
Well, what is peace? I mean, you have to maintain the peace.
Peace is not merely the absence of war.
Well,
someone said that.
The liberals, they advocate peace. That's a very high goal for them.
Right.
For conservatives, it's freedom and justice.
Yeah.
That's what we want. So peace is expendable as we're achieving our goal of justice and freedom. So if Adolf Hitler, like the French, they wanted peace.
Peace.
So they're into appeasement.
Sure.
So if Hitler wants to drive his tanks through Paris, fine. Peace.
Yeah, as long as we're at peace.
Right. Peace.
We don't have to go to
war. Whereas the conservatives are the ones that have to bail their tails out of this Nazi occupation.
That's right.
The conservatives, we want justice and freedom, and we're willing to spend peace, sacrifice peace to get freedom.
Yeah.
And so that's a fundamental difference. Now, the liberals, though, that's just their latest fad. They don't really care about peace.
No.
If it's the Soviet Union expanding its tyranny
by violence and force of arms,
they're fine with that.
Yeah, that's okay.
They're fine with that.
Because it's for a higher ideal, you
right.
understand.
Exactly. So yeah. Anyway, peace right now, peace and so.
And by the way, Bob, else? You know, yeah. Have you noticed how the liberals, they talk about peace, peace, peace? John Lennon was a great peace, right? Peace was yeah. his whole business, right? The last 5 years of his life.
Right.
The whole time he was preaching peace, he was violently killing himself. And destroying the lives of the people he influenced around him. Just like all of the hippies with their venereal diseases and their drug addiction, while they preach peace, they inflicted violence on our culture.
So hypocritical.
Yeah, it's a big fat lie.
All right. Hey, Jeff, thank you so much.
Dustin Thanks, Hoffman. Thanks.
Appreciate that call.
Thanks.
All right, now.
Dustin Hoffman. Not going to go see any more of his movies.
Didn't he play a woman in one of his movies?
Yeah, he was something like that. I don't think he's made a movie since like 1978.
I can't stand it when a guy plays a woman. Even when I was a little kid, and if it was Bob Hope on Ed Sullivan's
yeah.
show, I couldn't take it. Don't play a woman.
So Bob, you had good instincts from the start.
It grossed me
but
out.
But we better hurry up to the phones. We got packed lines here, folks, and one just dropped off, right, didn't it? No,
yeah,
it's full again.
Lines are full.
Never mind. Don't call 1-800-836-9278 until you hear someone hang up. Meantime, let's go to
Batavia, New York. Dan, speak your mind.
Hey, gentlemen. Good evening.
Howdy.
Hi, Dan.
How are we doing tonight?
Great,
sir.
Good, good. Bob, the more I listen to your show, the more subtle it comes to me. It you really make your listeners think.
I'm wow. thrilled to hear
what a
that.
Compliment.
That's
yes.
fun. Thank you.
And that one about the Tower of Babel and reversing the curse at Pentecost.
Yeah.
For the Christians to unite in unity, nothing would be impossible to them to get the gospel out.
Well, that I like that. And what I would call that would be a secondary application, which is valid. The Bible is loaded with secondary applications. And I would call that a secondary application, but not the not God's primary message when he reversed the curse.
I have to think a little bit more than about what the primary would be.
But that is, Dan, that's a great, great stat.
Yeah, just so you know, Dan, I would have never figured it out on my own.
Thank you very much for that. Let's go to Ada, Oklahoma. And, oh, and Doug, if somebody reads the plot and they see why God reversed the curse,
yeah.
is it just stretching a point, trying to squeeze something in?
Or no, it's blatantly obvious.
So obvious.
Yeah.
You couldn't get more obvious.
Yeah, it's one of those things where afterwards you say, how could I have missed that?
It was hidden in plain view.
Yeah.
That's like that messianic rabbi who put a quote on the back cover of the plot.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, Eliezer Rubach.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, what a great
you know,
guy.
If somebody goes to kgov.com.
Hey, I don't remember that in the plot.
Is this Gary?
Yes.
Hey, we picked up Gary.
I don't remember that in the plot.
It's
though.
In there, Gary.
It's in there.
I'll have to read it again.
Hey, you know what? You got to read the plot at least three times,
oh,
I've
no,
found. You got to go
no.
back. You do. You go back
no,
a couple times.
No, you don't. Hey, if somebody goes to kgov.com and they click on the store in the upper right.
The store?
There's a brand new store now.
Ooh,
brand new.
All right.
And if you click on the literature, go to the plot and detail information.
Yeah.
They're quotes from the back cover.
Right.
And this messianic rabbi and author, Eliezer Rubach, he said about reading the plot, take this startling journey into truth, so traditional, at each step, everything appears familiar.
Wow.
But it's really fun. Hey, Gary, could you hang on after the show?
You bet.
Oh, no, we're going to a break. We got more. Doug, commercial break.
Hey.
So when we get back on the air,
yeah.
we got to go to Ada, Oklahoma, Denver, Colorado, and Delphi, Indiana.
You know what I found? I've just realized what increases ratings.
What?
Babylon and Nimrod. Revelation. We need someone to mention Revelation at the first segment of every program.
I refuse.
Well, I...
How about, I know, let's cure cancer.
Let's cure cancer?
Like if somebody in your family has cancer and you send in $1,000.
$1,000?
Bob in your life.
Yeah.
What do you think will happen?
Well, if you have enough faith and you endorse the check properly, they could be
to
cured.
Bob in your life.
That's right.
What do you think will happen?
What do you think will happen?
They'll probably die.
They'll probably die.
But But at least you'll help support the show.
You'll help support the ministry, right.
You'll have one less family member anyway to worry about.
That's right. And, you know, they were probably going to die whether you sent the 1,000 or not, you know?
That's right.
All right.
I have to agree with that. Now, so, anyway, that's an ad we've wanted to put in the newspapers for Denver Bible Church. We probably will.
Did you know that Denver Bible Church won an award? Had you announced that on the radio program?
We did announce that. You were in some state earlier.
Yes, they won an award for the most creative or the funniest religious ad.
Best church ad of 2002.
That was awesome. And it was a filthy, disgusting liberal rag that gave us the award.
Yeah, Westward.
Or you. It was actually you and Jason who got the award. Right.
No, Jason wrote the ad. Jason, are you in a studio?
Yeah, sell something. It's a commercial.
Oh, it's the commercials.
We're supposed to sell something. It's a break. Jason wrote the top 10 reasons liberals hate the holidays.
And we're willing to sell them if people want to buy them.
Jason Troyer. And the church, you know, the elder board, we brought it up. We voted on it. We amended it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we ran it. Well, that was all over like a game of pool at Dave and Buster's. But then we ran it, and what a great ad. And we won an award.
Yeah.
The award only means about $400 of free advertisement.
Yeah.
Because it reran the whole ad.
Oh, it did?
Oh,
well,
that's nice. But it was funny.
Well, Bob, you brought up this interesting question earlier in the program about the curse at Babel and how it was reversed. And that brings to mind another of the great questions that has haunted us down throughout history as Christians. What about the guy who never heard the gospel of Jesus Christ?
Ooh.
What about him?
Ooh.
Well, folks, Bob has a Bible study, Romans. You can get some great
Romans
insight to that answer.
One?
Romans Volume 1, call 800-836-9278 and order Romans Volume 1.
Well, Jason Troyer's happy we did an ad at the end of that internet
at the
break.
End of the commercial.
We did.
Now, listen, if we're going to get through all these callers, we're probably going to have to go quick. So all you callers who are online, have your points ready. We're going to go back to Wally in Delphi, Indiana. Wally, please, once again, speak your mind.
Wally in China.
China.
Wally,
hey,
are you?
Hey, great to speak with you.
Oh, he's not from China. He's talking about China. Go ahead, Wally.
Okay, hey, here's my points.
Yeah.
Bob, last week you and I talked about buying goods from Mexico, and we both agreed that it was a good thing.
Yeah, economically.
Economically, it was a good thing. Mm. Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations wrote that buying goods from other countries was the right thing to do.
Well, it improves your own economy.
Well, exactly. And standard of living.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's my question. Is it morally wrong to import goods from China? And this might sound like America when I start reading all this off.
Well, we're going to ask Dr. Laura to answer this question.
Is it morally wrong to import goods from China who support abortion, human sterilization, child labor, and communist principles, and who's also threatening us with nuclear power or missile strikes through North Korea?
Well, you're sort of right. It's going to sound like America.
Yeah.
I mean, we're such an evil country, so we do have a dilemma. If we're not going to buy anything made in an evil country, we have to stop buying made in America.
First, right.
And then no made in Israel. And then maybe, what would China line up? Number?
It'd be down on the list, behind the French,
so,
for
so
sure.
So what you're getting at is it's an
number
evil
seven
world,
or eight.
And you've got to do business as is, and that's how it is, so be it.
Well, not necessarily. If you can, like, let's say AT&T. Or Barnes & Noble, or whoever, whatever, or Disney.
Any of these immoral companies.
Disney, and they
well, stop, stop right there. Is it morally right to buy oil from Saudi Arabia after September 11th?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Why?
Well, in the Bible, Paul tells us that we're in the world, even though we're not of the world. And so even though the Roman Empire was so wicked and evil, it was a murderous empire, still it was right to pay your taxes to the Roman Empire.
Okay, but hold on. Let me make this argument then. God in the Bible warned King Solomon about going into nations and adapting their cultures and marrying their women, and he got punished for it.
So don't marry any Saudi Arabian women. Wally, what do you want me to tell you?
We found the point there.
But,
no, that was a joke.
The Roman Empire... was an evil entity, yet you paid your taxes, just like our government is evil, yet it's appropriate to pay taxes. That doesn't mean that the government's not stealing from us
right.
because they're taxing us too much. They are.
But I think, Bob, that you make another point. Tell me if I'm taking this the wrong way. As long as you don't advocate, as long as you're not out there saying China is good and the way China runs its affairs is good and that forced abortion is good and that forced sterilization is good, as long as you're not endorsing
just
and
like
promulgating
Disney.
Their belief.
Just right. like Disney. If you said Disney is a morally upright company,
right.
that would be sinful.
That would be wrong.
If you said, you know, my kids, they have 1,000 things they can't do because the world is so corrupt, but I'm going to let them watch Toy Story because I don't want to forbid them from everything. Hmm. So we're buying a Toy Story DVD. And even
hey, Bob,
though we
hold
hate...
on a second. With the argument of protectionism, right?
Yeah.
Get this. Protectionism, basically the argument against it is bigger government, okay?
No.
Now, our government, the U.S., United States government, employs 12%, approximately 12% more people through the government than it does the manufacturing sector of the United States.
All right.
That's dangerous.
Protectionism leads to higher prices.
Yeah.
Well,
bad economics.
Yeah, because you've got monopolies, basically.
But the statistic that you just pointed out, Wally, is horrible. It's disgusting that the government employs 11% more people than the manufacturer. That's horrible.
Our government happens to be way too big.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's doing everything. And if you try to do everything, you don't do anything well. And so when George W. Bush, when we were attacked by terrorists, now this is just symbolic. But he was sitting in a fourth grade classroom.
Yeah, he was.
Now, if you're in charge of education, you can't be doing a very good job of defense. You can't.
That's a pretty harsh indictment.
You cannot. It's just like if IBM wanted to come out with a line of vegetables, fresh produce,
yeah.
they can't.
No, it wouldn't. Yeah.
It doesn't matter how smart they are, how much money they have, they can't. And the computers and the carrots would all be soggy.
Well, Bob, I got to tell you this. It's a hard pill for me to swallow that we're doing business with a communist country.
Well, I agree. I'm all for not if we can pull that off. But when we're so evil, it's hard to argue that we have a moral requirement not to do business with another evil country.
Yeah. And always keep in mind that there's 1 billion people in slavery in China and only a couple of million who are actually privileged and part of the communist class.
China's so evil.
And the slaves in China, we should do all we can to help.
Yeah, and if you could boycott China, you're going to have to become a nudist. But if you're going to boycott China,
and no shoes for you,
then more power to you. In Ada, Oklahoma, Gary, speak your mind.
Let's see. Hey, you remember those pastor qualifications that you...
Yeah, they're at DenverBibleChurch.org.
Yeah, DenverBibleChurch.org on the web.
Well, I was going to tell you, I did a little study, a test. I took all the churches in my area.
Yeah.
And I printed off a list up. You can get it on the internet.
Right,
right.
Their telephone numbers and everything. And I asked the pastors,
uh-oh.
You know, those questions.
Uh-oh. You are a great American, Gary.
It's really sad, though.
Gary,
no.
You are a great American.
It is. It's really. It's depressing.
What was the average score?
Well, I talked to 8 people. I wish I could have talked to more.
8 pastors. That's impressive.
Yeah.
And none of them, out of 8, of them scored over a 50.
Oh no!
No, and I want people.
He's bad.
Gary is
the
not.
The average was 35%.
Oh no!
Gary, correct me if I'm wrong, but Ada, Oklahoma, is the buckle of the Bible Belt.
There's not a Bible church in Ada.
Oh man,
that's sad.
That's
there
kind of
be.
Depressing.
You know, if somebody scores a 30 on this test, according to the scoring,
what
key,
is the recommendation on the scoring key?
Jesus, if they score a 30, what
Jesus
is it? You have
if
it there.
They hate me, they'll hate you. But everyone loves him. He's bad.
Yeah, Jesus said, if they hate me, they'll hate you. But everybody loves this guy. All right.
Hey, but
what's the lowest score you got?
The lowest score, 20.
20.
Like they all agree on the abortion and the evolution.
Okay, that's
all right.
Good.
Well, that's encouraging.
That
I mean,
is encouraging.
We'll take that.
A 20 is he's in it for the money or to avoid a real job, escape while you can.
Well.
There's no Hillarys out there. I didn't find any Hillarys.
You didn't get any zero. Did you call a United Methodist church?
No.
All right.
Thank you so much, Gary, for the call.
Let's go to Denver, Colorado. Josh, speak your mind.
Hello, Bob.
Hey. Hello, Josh.
Doug.
Hey, Josh, how are you?
I was just calling in about Nimrod.
You recognize this guy?
Nimrod?
Who's
he's a character from the Bible.
Not Nimrod, the caller.
Josh? Yeah. I know Josh from Denver. He's a biblical scholar out in Denver.
Just a little bit.
You teach out at the seminary out there, Josh? Is that it? Denver Seminary? Isn't that where you're accredited?
No.
No, okay. I might have
all right,
confused
so Josh is a Bible scholar known to Doug. Okay, yeah. Go ahead, Josh.
All right. I was just calling in about Nimrod and his mother, which is also his wife, but we won't get into that.
Yeah.
He apparently was Baal and a bunch of other of the gods, and, like, his mother was Diana.
Now, you're getting this history, you're taking some ancient Akkadian or some ancient Sumerian legends that very well, many of them are based in truth or partial history.
Part derived from the life of Nimrod.
And that's where you're getting this information?
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Hey, Josh, just one thing I've never been able to figure out about Nimrod. Well,
not about that topic. No, I haven't studied the ancient belief system regarding Nimrod. No,
but there are a bunch of mother son cults or religions that probably can be traced back to Nimrod. But I got a question for you, Josh.
Yes.
How come the Bible says that Nimrod was a mighty hunter before the Lord? What's up with that?
That's a good question.
That's one I haven't been able to figure out. Anyway, Josh, since you're starting so
early. Were there dinosaurs on the ark?
Were there dinosaurs on the ark?
Yes.
Probably some eggs, maybe, or some small ones.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Baby dinosaurs, reptiles.
Right. Sure, there probably was.
And the Tower of Babel, that was, you know, hundreds of years, 400 years or so.
After the flood.
After the flood. And so those baby reptiles that were on the ark could have been pretty massive.
Right. They got pretty large.
And for somebody to be known as a mighty hunter 3,000 years later, 4,000 years later, he probably hunted the larger reptiles to extinction in Mesopotamian Valley. That's what I guess.
Wow. I thought, that's as good as anything I've ever tried to
Josh, anything else?
Well, the Tower of Babel.
Yeah.
It was probably like one of the Mesopotamian ziggurats.
Yeah.
It was probably a lot bigger.
I think you're right. It probably was a ziggurat.
And
the likes of which we've dug up in Iraq.
Right.
Really?
When it says it was supposed to reach into the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's actually almost literal because at the top of Mesopotamian ziggurats and ziggurats in general, but mostly this kind.
Yeah.
They have this little top chamber that they have, like, the stars and the moon and the sun.
They have the zodiac engraved into the ceilings.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Yeah.
Hey, all right. Me and half of the audience want to know what's a ziggurat, okay? What's a ziggurat? It's like a pack of camels or what?
No,
it's kind of like a pyramid kind of thing.
Oh.
Yeah, an ancient temple, a religious structure.
Wow.
Yeah, like a temple.
Hey, Josh,
like
how old are you?
11.
Well, thanks for helping me improve my vocabulary, ziggurat. I'm going to remember that one.
God bless you, Josh.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call.
Wow, Bob, we've run out of time, but the good thing is you managed to get through all the callers and get them to make their points.
Mm.
And very professional of you.
Well, it was a fun show.
Yeah, it's a good time.
Doug, thank you for joining me. Now, I'm headed to Nashville.
Going to Nashville.
To the NRB.
Are you going to Graceland? No, that's Memphis.
Yeah, it's Memphis.
You're
going
to Memphis.
On Wednesday.
Yeah, but you're not going to Graceland.
I'm not going to Graceland.
Not going to Graceland?
No.
All right, thank you very much.
Five reasons Elvis did not go to hell.
Five reasons Elvis did not go to hell?
Yeah. He didn't go to hell because he did drugs. He didn't go to hell because he was a fornicator.
Right.
He didn't go to hell because he sang godless lyrics.
Okay.
He didn't go to hell because he didn't go to church regularly.
Okay.
He didn't go to hell because he didn't read the Bible through in a year.
Really? Those are five reasons Elvis did not go to hell.
Right.
Wow.
If Elvis went to hell, it was because he didn't believe and trust in Jesus Christ.
Ah. So that's just the one reason that you could end up in hell right there.
Right.
Even Elvis.
Right. Wow. Graceland... if you, by grace, you go to heaven. This is Bob and Eric remind you to do right and risk the consequences.